So, Jason, how did you first get into magic?
Well, Tommy, it's one of those things where I think I've kind of always done it. And I go back and forth sort of questioning that. So, as a child, there's things that I remember that I can question as childhood fantasies. Did this actually happen? Is this something right. I really did? Like, I remember I lived next to the woods, and I would go out into the woods, and I would talk to things in the woods.
Right.
And
More than just, like, trees and birds. Like, I mean,
more than just trees and birds, yeah.
Yeah.
And I swear that as a child, I had conversations with things. Now, looking back at it now, I feel like it's just... did I make that up? Did I have to question that over and over and over again, right? Did that happen? Was I a kid making things up?
Well, you see, here's the thing. I suppose two questions I'd have. Define conversations, and two, why does it matter if you made it up or not?
That's a good point. That is a good point. Conversations. I would go and I know that there was a couple places out in the woods that I would... meet things. I felt like there was something there and that I could talk to it. And I didn't hear, not vocally or not in my ears, that something was talking back to me. But I just kind of knew whatever little questions I would ask, whatever these things were, I would get an answer. And it was simple things. Just, how are you doing today? You know, is the stream over here okay? Can I go find frogs in it today? Yeah. They're like, yes, there's frogs down there.
It wasn't like, what is the lottery numbers for Saturday night's jackpot? You missed out there.
I did. I should have asked.
And what age were you at this? Like, how young were you?
I probably started around when I was like 6. Mm. And then up until I was like 10 or so, when I'd go out in the woods there.
So what was the kind of background you were coming from? What was your family? Like, was this, let me see, what I'm asking is, was this kind of a normal thing that might have been, like, was your mum a witch, you know, or, you know, like, was it an extraordinary thing for you as a six-year-old to go out into the woods? And
going out of the woods was something I normally did, but no, my mother wasn't a witch. My family wasn't into magic or anything like that. Mm. I was raised Catholic, but it wasn't oppressive in any way. It wasn't one of those, oh, magic is evil, you have to stay away from it, any right. sort of thing like that.
So not a real Catholic family. Or do you pretend on?
Sure. My mother did used to say that her great aunt sat on a bench next to our kitchen and watched her cook, and her great aunt was deceased at this time.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, so that was sort of there. But beyond going out into the woods and having conversations, when I look back on it, I distinctly remember some things that I would these days definitely call magical. And that was, I would decide something in my life was going to happen and then not worry about how I would make it happen or anything like that. Just decide, this is going to happen, and then just wait until it did.
Right.
And at the time, I didn't think that was something magical or anything like that.
Right, okay.
But looking back on it, it feels very much like that, because those things did happen,
and I didn't
put any effort into them happening. I just decided, no, it's gonna happen, and it did.
Yeah, and it's like a very magical thing, like the whole thing of... negating the lust of result and all that too is like already in in that. And like, what sort of stuff are you asking for, I suppose? What was it, just like, I'll get a new bike, or, you know, or what was the
childish things like that? You know, one of them was a keyboard musical instrument, which I still have. It's over on my left here.
Oh wow, cool.
Or I'd get to go to the local theme park or something like that on times that it wouldn't normally be a time that I would get to do something like that. Or it would be, oh, I really want to be able to go outside this weekend and it says it's going to rain. No, it's not going to rain.
So was this separate to the beings that you were talking to in the trees?
Completely
or in the
separate.
Forest? So it wasn't like you were asking people make
nope,
this happen.
Not at
it was
all.
Just so you were definitely the agent of change.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
And it's something it's not something I ever spoke out loud either.
Okay.
I would just be thinking about it and decide, no, this is going to happen. It's going to happen like this. I don't know how I'm going to make it happen. I'm not going to worry about it. It's just going to happen.
And so I assume then, given that you can't decide when, if this, you know, those experiences were true or not, that something happened that changed, that you stopped going to the woods and talking to whatever it
yeah.
was. Or, yeah.
I think I kind of just grew out of that sort of thing for a while. I didn't think about it anymore. It just kind of faded away. There was no hard defined stopping point.
Okay.
It just, I didn't do it anymore. I didn't go out in the woods anymore. I didn't really try to make things happen just by deciding it. Though when I was doing those things, I didn't really know what I was doing anyway, so it would be hard for me to purposefully stop. And then years went by, and I gave none of it any second thought whatsoever. And a couple years ago from now, probably 2015, 2016 or so, I started getting sort of interested in these things again spontaneously. The first thing that I picked up was reading tarot cards. And I didn't have a real purpose for it other than it's very popular in the area that I live. And rather than going and getting a reading from someone, I had never gotten a reading from someone before. I just decided one day, I'd really like to know how that worked. And so I went out and I got a couple books on tarot and a deck and then another deck and then another deck, and they just kept rolling in.
Right.
And I learned how to read tarot, and I spent a long time trying to figure out how do I make this work, first of all. And then after I realized it didn't take that much effort to get something interesting happen with it, it was, okay, why does this work? What is going on? Why is this working? And trying to explain it away, you know, oh, okay, well, you know, can I just tell any story I want with this and it'll work no matter what cards I draw? If I purposefully draw different cards, will that still make something interesting? And is that because I am just making up a story that fits with whatever's going on for the question I'm asking with tarot, or is it because they're actually working in some way? And then from there it went, there's no way I'm going to actually know how this works. In what ways is it useful for me?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, the better question, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And when I stopped caring how it worked, people started asking me for readings and stuff constantly, just like a switch was flipped. I would always have a deck with me at parties and events where I would be out with friends, and people would just ask, hey, can you do a reading for this, a reading for this, a reading for this? And from there, I went to a sort of theater event, and someone outside there was reading runes for people.
Okay.
And I said, oh, that's really cool. I've never seen this before. Let me go get, you know, my fortune told by having the runes read. And they told me to put my hand in the bag, draw a bunch out, throw them on the table. And they did that. I did that. And they gave me a reading based on what came up. And it seemed so completely wrong. Just every single thing about it was wrong. And so I kind of went off to the side and I looked up on my phone, what are the names of some of these runes that I was looking at? And they had completely made up names.
Right.
For them. The reading was completely bullshit that
I got.
Which was fine. It's someone doing a thing at a theatrical performance or in the lobby of one. And I thought, okay, maybe they know what they're doing. I'll go get a reading. But no, they were just making stuff up. But from there, I was like, okay, I can read tarot. I want to learn how to read runes now.
Yeah.
Let me go get a couple sets of runes and figure out how this works. And it's similar enough that it's easy to pick up once you know how to do one.
Yeah.
And from that point, I've always been sort of
just
heavy.
Just before you go in, I suppose, more. When you first came across the tarot and, you know, you bought your first deck and the same with the runes, was there a kind of a sense of, I already know these, or was it a completely alien, I know nothing about these, I have to learn? Or what was kind of the feeling that was going on?
From switching from tarot to runes, no, it wasn't that because I know tarot, I know all of these runes. Mm. It was, this is all a different set of symbolism. I need to learn that.
Yeah.
But the act of doing the divination felt the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? These are different methods and ways I can make a story out of pulling different things out or throwing them down on the table or something like that. Completely different symbolism. Some of them somewhat similar, but not terribly the same ones. No. They give different answers, different types of answers to things. But the methodology of it feels very similar, at least to me. I started looking at different forms of divination from there. I have Ogham staves, ones that I've made myself, and then some fancy ones that I got online.
It's pronounced Ohm, by the way.
Ohm, excuse me, my poor American Ohm pronunciations.
How do you pronounce the holiday that's coming up?
Son.
Oh, well done. I'll let you off that, and you get full marks for that. It's not, you're not a Sam Hain fan, no?
No.
So yeah, how did you get on with the Ohm stuff? Because Spud's been doing a bit with it recently and stuff, and it's something I could never get into because I don't think it originally was any sort of divination, used as a divination. Well, but of course, neither was the runes, and of course, neither was the tarot. So, and it's very sort of... Did you get on with it as easy as you came to the tarot and the runes, or...?
I do not have them memorized. I have to look them up in... I have notes on them, and I have to look them up in my notes every time I want to do them, just because I don't have them memorized. But I like them. I like the symbolism of all the individual trees and plants within them. And I think it's because I spent a lot of time in the woods in my youth. It feels kind of like home, sort of.
Right, yeah. You know? I know what you mean, yeah. Were you doing any kind of magic at this point? Wish, you know, incorporating the tarot or, you know, the magic side of the runes or anything like that? Or was it...
Not at all yet.
Right.
So from this divination stuff, well, not really from that, just sort of simultaneously as I was learning all of these things, I've always been sort of interested in the mind and the nature of the universe and how they sort of connect to each other.
Okay.
And I started doing a lot of reading about physics and the study of consciousness, and those sort of things led me to more esoteric ideas about these things, which led me to remote viewing and to the gateway experience with astral projection and things like that. And I found a full set of the tapes from the Gateway experience, and I started giving them a try. And I felt interesting things in my head, but not too much happened.
Right,
I didn't have any spectacular experiences or anything like that.
You didn't end up in a castle on the moon or anything like that, no?
No. After I started doing those, I got the whole way through the Gateway program. I tried some remote viewing on my own. Didn't have great results. And one day, about 2.5 years ago now, I had a dream. And this is the most vivid dream that I have ever had in my life.
Okay.
Even to this point, I've still never had one that's been as real as this. It did not feel in any way like a dream.
Okay. And have you had other lucid dreams previous to this, or?
I never had. Right. Nothing. In this dream, I was standing on top of a mountain, a sort of a mountain range, looking down into a valley that was flanked by two other sets of mountains.
Okay.
Where I was standing, there was sort of a peak, a little dip, and then another peak. And I was kind of right in the middle between those, looking down into this valley. And there were other people around. And the other people were sort of dressed in, I'd say, sort of Middle Eastern style robe clothing.
Okay.
I had no particular awareness of my body or what I was wearing or anything like that. I just knew I was there with these people. And on the right peak, there was a large stone temple, sort of like a Jewish style temple that you would have seen in Jerusalem or something like that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
On the right side was, or on the left side, excuse me, was the ruins of a very similar building.
Okay.
And the people around me were walking back and forth between these two buildings. And then the sky started to get dark with heavy clouds. I heard from down in the valley horns, one after another, getting closer and closer, just blaring. And I knew that somehow signaled a storm was coming, and lightning began flashing in the distance, and the wind picked up and started blowing incredibly heavily. And the people started splitting and going directly to either one side or the other. And I went to the side on the left. And there was a large square hole in the ground there, kind of like a well or something like that.
Okay.
And just as it started to rain, myself and the other people there climbed down into this well, which led into a tunnel, which led to this gigantic set of double stone doors. The doors, without us doing anything, swung open. We all went inside, and they swung closed. And we were just in a single stone room. And from near the top of the room, there was a small opening, and this sort of blue mist came into the room. And it took the shape of this blue humanoid figure with sort of a golden nervous system, circulatory system, sort of running through it.
Okay.
And
like similar to the half-reformed Dr. Manhattan, something like that?
Or, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good way of looking at it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it spoke to us, but it didn't speak out loud. It spoke in our heads.
Right.
It was probably about like 12 feet tall or so. It sat down, and when it was sitting, it was the same height as we were tall, basically.
Okay, right.
And we asked it, what is this place? What's going on? And it says it was here to answer questions. So people started asking it all sorts of things about the nature of the universe. Some people asked it, are you God? Is there more than one universe? Is this only one universe? And it gave answers to all of these. It did not claim to be God. It said it was just there to teach people. And then eventually, people stopped asking questions and we all got very tired. And I asked it, are we allowed to go to sleep? And it said, yes, you are. And as soon as it said that, a brilliant golden light came out from around where its heart would be, and it just filled the room, and then I immediately woke up.
Wow. So what did... Well, obviously, that's it's going to take you a while to process that, but did you... What did you do after that? Like, did you go back to sleep? Did you, quit your job and become a monk, or did you,
None of those things. I probably tried to go back to sleep for about 10 minutes and realized it wasn't happening. Then I immediately wrote this down.
Yeah.
I've never written a dream down before. That was a new thing for me as well. So I didn't have any sort of symbolism vocabulary that would have explained any of this to me at all. And I started just Googling things, looking for anything that I could get some sort of information about this. I saw some things where people said, oh, we go to sleep and then we go to school for different things sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting. That's kind of similar in some way. But in Googling all of this, I found online different forums, including like Reddit, for chaos magic.
Right.
I'm like, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. What's that? And from that point, that just opened the floodgates to every other little bit of magic I have done in the past couple of years since then.
So what sort of stuff did you get into once? Like, did you find the Grant Morrison, the Sinful Lecture? That's usually one of the first things people find. Or was it straight to Rune Soup? Was it, who was it? Peter Carroll.
I did see Grant Morrison. I picked up Peter Carroll's books, Alan Chapman's Advanced Magic for Beginners.
Of course.
And then from that point, I started collecting as many magical books as I could and started reading through them. I taught myself astrology. Not really into it, but I just wanted to know how it worked.
Yeah.
I kind of stayed away from the more witchy side of things.
Like the Wiccan type thing, is that what you mean?
Yeah. It didn't feel right. It didn't feel like things that I was supposed to be looking at or doing in some
Which
way.
Is interesting, given the kind of forest, earth-based, I suppose, magic you were involved in, you know, initially. It would seem that you'd be an obvious candidate to gravitate towards some sort of neo-pagan type path or something. But it's interesting that you didn't feel that, you know.
Yeah, it didn't feel, I think, connected to reality in the way that those sort of things used to be, because those were something I just did and I didn't really think about it. This kind of stuff was, oh, what sort of mystical things could I be doing? To change the world right now, to change my world and to change myself. I didn't have that sort of connection between doing magic and the rest of my world at that time when I was looking through all of this stuff.
So what was the first actual practical magic that you did that you, rather than, as a kid where you just kind of, it came out of you, what was where you go, right, I'm going to do some magic. What was it?
Very first thing that I did was a sigil, and it was to make my dogs please stop barking for the rest of the day at least. And they did. They
I thought you were
going
to have
barking.
Going to give me the horror story, and the both of them dropped dead.
No. My dogs love to guard my home, and one of them will bark if someone opens a car door 3 miles down the road.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
And I have never seen him just as quiet and docile as the first time that I did that.
Yeah.
He just went and laid down and took a nap for the rest of the day.
So did you do 10 more sigils immediately?
I tried a whole bunch more stuff and none of them worked. They worked in some way, probably, but
I don't know.
I
know that's kind of to say, oh, magic always works, just not in the way you expect it. Or I just go say, yeah, sometimes magic doesn't work. There's just no question. It just doesn't. There's no way out of it.
Right.
But there is that kind of thing that it seems to happen to everyone, that at the beginning you're kind of given a couple of free passes here. You know, you can do whatever you want. You have three wishes. And then after your three wishes, now you have to start to work. You have to start to do the things. Mm-hmm. And so everything kind of falls away. So chaos magic, you had that. How did that progress? And from just trying to gather everything that was around you, did it turn into a daily practice, or was it one particular area? I know you said you looked at astrology and didn't like it. Was there, did you go into, I don't know, Kabbalah and not like it? Or did you find, stuff that you were, what happened next?
Yeah, sure. Chaos magic did not become a daily practice. It became I need something, or I want something, or I want something to be different. Try to do something about that. And it was sometimes used for that, and sometimes not. And I sort of fell into finding the Golden Dawn type ritual work.
Okay.
From that point.
Via, lesser, say, Crowley or straight to Golden Dawn? Like,
straight to the Golden Dawn. I didn't. I've never actually read Crowley, any of his books. I should pick them up at some point. But yeah, something well, about like, it never called to me.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, it's there's no there's no law that says you have to read them. You
know? There's. I like it from two points of view, right? I like the what sort of things should I be learning and doing, and then I like it from the academic side of I'm kind of interested in just reading everyone's opinion, even if I'm never going to look at it or try it myself.
Yeah, there's one kind of, I suppose, one thing that you should watch out for on the whole, because I'm a person who equally does, you know, all going what not necessarily feels right, but, you know, going in the direction that I feel to be pulled towards, is that you tend to probably sometimes shy away from difficult or stuff that you probably should read, but you don't want to because you there's something about it that you don't like or you don't want to look at or something. Now, that isn't equally to say that you should, you know, always read only books or stuff that you don't like. That's not what I'm saying, but
for sure.
You know, it's like what you said about the astrology thing. It's like, check it out, know how it works. Not for me, fine. Mm-hmm. But now you know, it's that whole kind of, I suppose, chaos magic thing that I love and hate at the same time, is the immediately turning it into your own thing. And you go, well, sometimes you should do it right first and know why you're changing it, you know. It's just all part of that kind of paradigm, I suppose.
I think that's probably one of the reasons that I started getting into more ritual-based things. I wanted to know what rules I'm breaking or disregarding before I, you know, completely left them off to the side. So I started doing Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram because that's what the book says that you should do.
That's it.
I didn't really have any expectations or know why. I just wanted to try it. I wanted to try ritual magic after I had, you know, drawn little symbols on paper for a year or two.
Real magic.
Sure.
I wanted a robe. Did you do the robe thing? Did you?
I have kind of a really long, very light sweater that's kind of a robe. It's not really a robe, but it's very comfortable.
And that's the most important. That's why you need a robe. It's for the comfort element. It's not for, it's not for the cool factor. So just before, before you go on about the ritual itself, did you find the Golden Dawn, like, did you get that big Israeli Regardi book, or, you know,
that's the one I have, that is, the big thick one,
and so that was like that the first Golden Dawn thing you got, or was there, you know, was the podcast, was this, you know, this, you know, how, because it's easy to, I suppose, if someone's listening to this and going, oh, and I found the Golden Dawn, it's kind of like going, yeah, how do you do that? You know what I mean? It's easier now, of course, you just Google Golden Dawn. But I suppose now, course, you get that Nazi party in Greece or whatever.
Oh, God, yeah. Everyone's taking the names for all the cool occult things.
Yeah, yeah. And all the symbols and all the... Yeah. Anyway.
So, I found the OBRP online, first of all. And I think a little more research into that led me down the way to Damien Eccles, and I started watching his YouTube videos and looking at what he was about. And then from there sort of found, okay, this is all stuff that he's written about, but it's all from Golden Dawn stuff originally. Let me go get that book. What is that book? Let me find that and get that and start reading the original whatever this is, instead of someone on the internet's version of it or some other version, something like that. So I started working out with ritual magic and trying to just figure out what I was doing with it, you know, get on some kind of daily schedule. What can I do every single day as a bit of magic? If I want to really be doing this seriously, I want to do something every single day because I need to be practicing it. And this seems like something structured enough that I could comfortably do it every day.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to do a chaos magic thing every day, because if I'm doing a sigil for something or other, it feels to me like, you know, I need to be trying to do something with that sigil. There's not like, just write a generic sigil that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, you know, you have a nice dinner. Like, I don't really care or whatever. You know, you run out of things you want very, very quickly. Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. So.
Had you a meditation practice or anything at this point? Or
not at this point.
Right.
Not at this point. I did not. I started with Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Pentagram and the Kabbalistic cross that goes along with it.
Yeah.
From there, I added the middle pillar exercise. And then a few months later to that, I added the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Hexagram. And then invoking versions of those later in the day.
Okay. As originally intended. Most people
Yes. And then I realized I was feeling interesting during these. It
okay.
physically makes you feel an interesting way.
Right. So explain that a bit more. What was the... Did you start off feeling foolish doing it and then it felt different, or did you immediately get into it and then it felt different? Or
I don't think I felt foolish, because I understand I was... It felt like a performance to me. I mean, I'm doing a performance for myself of what this book says that I should be doing.
Yeah.
I'm visualizing the things that I've read people say I should be visualizing while I'm doing this performance. So it didn't feel foolish or silly. It was an experiment.
Right.
I wanted to see what would happen. At first, not a lot. But then it's a hard to describe feeling. I felt mentally different, sort of calm sometimes, sort of energized at other times.
Okay.
The middle pillar in particular, because it is in its way a form of meditation, it was one of my first experiences with meditation. Very calming, but then just the idea of, especially coming from a Catholic background, the idea of I am sitting in this spiritual temple that I have created and focusing on the divine with four or six angels, depending on what version of the rituals you do, around me. It began to take on a sort of feeling of something divine is within and around me.
Okay.
And that's a weird thing to try to describe. What does something divine within you feel like? It felt joyful.
Okay. Was it terrifying? Sort of, these things usually
It was a little bit scary.
Yeah.
When that part sort of started to happen, it felt energizing. It felt powerful.
Right.
And so, me being sort of from a scientific background, I decided I want to know what the hell's going on in my head while all of this is happening.
Yeah.
And I went and I bought this little headband that I have over here.
Okay.
And it's used for meditation. It's got like a guided meditation program that goes with it, and it measures your brain waves.
Oh, it's just the iSense thing.
This is the Muse headband.
Yes. It's about $300 or something, isn't it?
I got it on sale on Amazon. Okay. It cost me like $70 for the original version of it. Yeah.
Right,
so
okay.
not too bad.
No, you did well. Is it well? Is it any good?
It's $70.
Decent.
It's decent. It's useful if you're not very experienced with meditation and you need to understand how to calm your brain down. It plays noises in the background while you have the headband on. And as it measures your brain waves, if they're very active, it plays like more and more noises. The one I usually use is like a rainstorm.
Okay.
It gets rainier and rainier the more you're thinking about stuff. And then the rain slows down and calms and birds start chirping if you are calm. And it's very relaxing.
Right.
But that's not the main reason I bought it. I wanted to know what the hell was going on in my head. So I am a software engineer. And I made a little thing that can get the raw output from the electrodes that are touching my head.
Okay, very cool.
And so I put it on when I started doing meditations and stuff and trying to figure out what the hell my brainwave activity was doing.
And what did you notice?
So there's a lot of different states of that your brainwaves can be in. Alpha is the normal awake one. Mm-hmm. Theta waves are usually when we're around falling asleep and we're being creative in some way.
Yeah, that's the new age hype, is that the sure. theta stage, isn't it? Like, yeah, they're all about that.
Yeah. And theta waves are where at least my brain goes when I'm doing most of that ritual work and visualization.
Okay.
They massively are louder than the rest of my brain waves at that time, except when I get into the middle pillar.
Okay.
At which point I get an incredibly high level of gamma waves.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Which are a more recently discovered one, and they are usually only seen by people in some sort of deep meditation.
Yeah.
So that is whatever it is that I'm experiencing when I'm doing that sort of thing.
So does that give you a bit of a boost, I suppose, then on going, well, it's more than just, for want of a better word, imagination. I'm actually physically changing
myself. I think it did.
Myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely did. From there, I went back to the Gateway program because I wanted to put the headband on and see what happened when I listened to these binaural audio things that are playing in my ears and seeing what's going on. And I started having interesting mental experiences as I followed these tapes. I would be in fantastical places in sometimes. I would contact different spiritual guides that they tell you to have, which are interesting, right? Because some of them are like, oh, tell your spiritual guides to come over to you now. And I'm like, well, what if they're busy? What, are they doing something else? Why would they just come whenever I ask them to come? What are they? Are they doing something interesting? Do they have their own existence outside of my head of what's going on? All of this led me to eventually have an actual astral projection here in the physical world.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which was very mundane and brief. I've only had 3 or 4, and they've all been incredibly mundane, which is a weird thing to say about astral projection.
Was that like
right?
You astral project and like go to the fridge and check if you have milk and then come back?
The few times I've done it, I have not at first realized that I was astral projecting until I had to, until I like turned around and I would see myself laying on the couch or on the bed wherever I was. I've never been able to do it on command. It's been after I've been doing things related to it, it sort of just spontaneously happens at some point later, not when I've intended to do it. But yeah, it's just, I could walk around my house, I could go outside, I could walk through the wall, I could fly up into the air a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's about it. You know, you can't do too much.
You say fairly mundane, you still got to fly, still got to walk through a wall.
That's also very true. That's very true. I've noticed the experience of it fades, at least for me, it fades rapidly after
like
it
your
happens.
Childhood experiences or like a dream? Or
like a dream. Like
right.
a dream.
Okay. Like all magic is a bit like that though, isn't it? Have you noticed?
I would think so. Yeah. Like it feels so real at the time and then 2 weeks later it's like I did that, kinda. And then a month later it's like, I think I did that at one point. Did I really do that? Did that actually happen?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, there's a normalization that your brain or the universe or the matrix tries to impose on you, which is that thing that I really like about Ant LaVey, his thing where he says that if you get something by magic, you know, always say it's by magic or it's taken away from you. And I think it's pointing to that exact thing that eventually it'll be taken away from you as a magic moment if you let it, you know, that you have to keep reminding yourself, no, I did a thing and it happened. Because your brain will go, no.
Yeah, you find ways to rationalize it away or just forget it or just let it fade into
or lessen the importance of it. Like, say you see, I seen one night like a star exploding and it was the most amazing thing. And even at the time I was going, what? You know, wasn't right. a firework, wasn't anything. But I have to constantly remind myself that that happened and that it was, you know, miraculous. Because my brain's kind of going, ah, yeah, it's probably a firework. It wasn't a firework. I know, I've seen fireworks. But it is, you know, part of you that's just going, no, nah, forget that. Look, don't look at the man behind the curtain. Come on.
Right.
Just keep your eyes on the news. So when you were doing these things, middle pillars, getting the gamma brain state, what was going on in your life? Was there a kind of a knock-on effect? Like the way people, and I've experienced where, you know, sometimes when you do an awful lot of banishing rituals, you know, your life kind of falls apart a bit. Or, you know, for other people, it can massively improve. They're very rare, those people. But was there something that was going on in your life that was kind of echoing your magical practice? Or was it, you know, even keel?
Honestly, not a lot was different in my life.
Right.
When I was really into this part of this, which was this past year, is when I got into all the heavy ritual stuff and eventually picked up meditation and stuff as well. You know, we were in quarantine, mm-hmm. right? We had just started quarantine. So, I mean, maybe you could say the world sort of fell apart when COVID happened. Yeah. But
yeah, nothing really happened. You know, the entire world changed dramatically. Yeah. But no.
Yeah. I think it sort of coincided with that. I sort of started near the end of 2019 and then early 2020, we got into quarantine, and that kind of just gave me time to be in isolation and practice all of this stuff without any other interference. I am a completely different person now from when I started this.
From magic or from maturing, from growing up, or all of the things, from circumstance, or do you point at magic as it?
I point to magic and mainly ritual meditation and other forms of meditation.
Okay.
Yeah. The fact that I was doing magic every single day for over an hour every day.
Okay.
And then I eventually added just other forms of meditation to that, less trying to actually accomplish something with magic, no banishing, things like that.
Yes,
just
the
straight up meditating on on different magical things or just nothing. Blank slate. Yeah.
Could you do any of the tatva stuff that the Golden Dawn, like, were you staring at yellow circles or blue triangles and all that stuff?
I did not do those.
Oh, man, I tried that. I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to do this. I did it twice and went, I'm definitely not doing this anymore.
Sure. I think as I've gone through reading all of these different books, magical books and non-magical books, and just other sort of spiritual things, and explored different religion and things like that, it all, at least for personal development, pointed straight back to meditation in some form or other, right? It kind of, my practice sort of stopped being about, can I do something with magic externally?
Yeah.
And more, can I change myself in some way? What internal growth can I have? What ends can I work towards as a human being?
Yeah. I've seen, because that's totally what happened in my magic practice too as well. You know, it's just, I don't think it's necessarily the path everyone goes, but it seems that the path a lot of people go, that, you know, you just kind of, that kind of terrible split where you go, oh, high magic, low magic, which it's not, you know, quite exactly that, but you do tend to, because you have to, I suppose, start looking at the shadow stuff. There's just, because it's either do that, and then once you start that, you end up being in it, or you turn away from it, and then, you know, you kind of become stagnant, and, you know, your magic practice just doesn't seem to go anywhere. So I think there is that kind of need to turn inward. And I mean, it's like such a cliche, and like, I mean, cliches are cliches because, you know, they're mostly true. So, you know, you turn the mirror towards yourself. And did you find that when you did that, it was a fun and happy experience? Or did you find, like most of us, that it's a horrifying experience?
No, it is a lot to confront.
It is, yeah.
to understand yourself and look at everything you are and look at what you want to be different. And then after that, to begin searching for where is I? What is I? Can I define I? Is there an I?
Who is the I that's trying to define the I?
Exactly. Yeah. So I saw a movie, A Dark Song, which is a beautiful movie, and they do a neat little ritual in there, which they claim is the Abramelin ritual.
Sure, yeah.
I had no idea what that was, so I looked it up.
Because, you know, any rational, decent human being would look at a horror film and go, yeah, I might try what that is.
I had been looking at reviews, and I had seen that it is an actual ritual they were trying to do in the movie. It is a real thing that existed, so I wanted to know what it was. Mm-hmm. So I find, you know, the ritual to gain the knowledge and conversation of your holy guardian angel. And I'm like, well, you know, what is that supposed to be? I'm Catholic. I know what a guardian angel is. Sure. I remember as a child, we would do a thing where we'd pray to our guardian angel and ask it to take care of us and tell us what its name is and things like that. I'm like, now that I think back on that, wait a minute, what? What its name was? What?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
That's very strange and different. But I looked it up. I got the book. You're supposed to seclude yourself for six
months. The McGregor book, is this the which translation did you end up with? The Golden Dawn one.
I do not remember which one I have, honestly. It's sitting over on my desk.
Well, which one is it? Is it 6 months or is it a year and a half?
It is the 6 month.
All right, so it's McGregor then.
Okay.
And was there any kind of thought of getting a house in the woods and having a magical retirement I suppose the magical retirement was the lockdown, really, wasn't it? I suppose, like,
it was. I would love to get a house out in the woods and magically retire, but that's not in the cards at the moment.
No. That's the dream. We can all live the dream.
Yeah. But I saw this ritual and I was like, well, that's something I will probably never do. there's all of this stuff I gotta get. I gotta have someone bring me like food and stuff, and not talk to anyone for a second. It's not gonna happen. Yeah. I'll never do it. And then there's a little video of Alan Chapman saying how to gain the knowledge and conversation of your holy guardian angel, and it's like two lines you have to say.
For people who don't know, it's the Buddhist Geeks video. It's a just search for Alan Chapman on the Buddhist Geeks website, you'll find it. Or go to the Adventures in Wubu Discord, and it's in the Alan Chapman section. So,
I saw that little video, and I'm like, well, that's simple.
Yeah,
I wonder if it works. I can do that. I can add that to my rituals, my meditation practice, my stuff that I do every day. I can do that, sure. And so I did. And I try to surrender to whatever this thing is that I'm supposed to be giving my magical practice and my destiny and future to. And my magical rituals that I were doing every day became sort of more and more vivid.
Okay.
The visualizations that I was doing during them became more and more vivid. And one day, I sort of just blanked in the middle of them. And I was just nowhere. My visuals stopped. I stopped doing the ritual. And I didn't have, like, experiences of dissolution or peak experiences or anything like that. It was just, everything I was doing is just gone. And it was just me.
Okay.
And it was me then having a conversation with myself. And it was me having a conversation with myself where I responded to myself and told myself I was a different name than the name that I was using for myself. And it was just back and forth like that for a while. And then I was sort of back in the regular world after that. Reasonably uneventfully. It wasn't a profound divine experience that I had. But after that, I can kind of just always immediately call that state back into itself. And it comes to me in dreams now. It suggests different practices and different things that I should be doing and ways to guide what I should be looking at. But it's not necessarily just words most of the time. It's just a gentle nudge in whatever sort of direction.
A knowing feeling, a silent knowing, possibly, or is something...
That's a beautiful way to describe it, Tommy. Where would you have gotten that one?
No, it just came to me. It came to me.
There was a distinct familiarity to it, though. And it was the idea that
as if
it's
always
been there.
As if you knew your entire life. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's always been there, and it's always going to be there, even after whatever I... am experiencing as me, I right now, is gone. That is still there.
Yeah.
And I will be there with it. Or as it, or
yeah, so like existence. Just kind of expand a bit, because it's a, well, it's non, we don't know the answer, but we can kind of speculate, but what is, you reckon, what is the HDA? Is it the perfected you? The future you? Is it you plus something else? Or, you know, like, even Crowley with his kind of, you know, IWAS thing, he changed his mind more or less about what it was, in that he very much believed it was him at the beginning, and then the further he progressed with it, went, oh no, there's something more to this, you know, there's something a bit alien too. So just interested what your thoughts are on what you think
of it. Have you heard of the holographic theory of the universe?
Yes, where everything is within every element of the universe, kind of thing, yeah.
So my perspective on this is that it is, if every bit of the universe is contained within every bit of the universe, it is what I am from a different zoom level of the universe. There's no difference. I am. It is within me. I am within it. Everything else is within the same thing. It's got just a different angle of looking at everything.
Like, and the kind of the different vantage point of that could, you know, what's that book called? Flatline, not Flatline, whatever that one
Flatland.
Is.
Flatland.
That, yeah. That type of thing. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
What would we look to, you know, if we were a 5D... you know, being, how would we see ourselves, you know, all that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's like, because, I mean, we can't know, but obviously from our vantage points, because we have a limited thing, so we can only kind of guess. Does it feel in the way, like, say, Jung would have that, you know, that you're a male's counterpart, or thing is kind of female for the most part, you know, your animus, and then you have, or the anima, and then, you know, the female would be male. Does it have a kind of a gender, or is it a neutral, or does that even play into it at all? Both? None?
I've eventually been able to have a sort of visualization of it, and that feels like a him to me.
Yeah.
The visualization that I can see of it when I think of it is in no way like anything that I ever would have expected.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to pin down exactly what it looks like. It's got a sort of Buddhist or Indian, like Hindu sort of flair to it, which is nothing that I would have ever expected in any way whatsoever. I'm not very learned about those sort of things.
Okay.
Nothing I would have ever personally picked as something that would have represented some higher version of myself or anything like that. It was incredibly surprising. But yeah, it has been a major influence in my life since that has happened.
And how long ago is that, if you don't mind me asking?
I mentioned so it's in the Discord when it happened. It was just a few months back. Maybe about 2 months ago.
So then after that happened, was there any change in your kind of, were you still doing your middle pillars, your lesser banishings, your daily practice, or did you just continue on?
I asked, what should I be doing for now? Do I need to keep doing the middle pillar? Do I need to keep doing the, you know, lesser banishing? And the answer is no, you can stop that.
Okay.
And so I did. I stopped that. I continue the meditation practices. I've been looking at, you know, Alan Chapman's Magia.
Mm-hmm.
I have began scrying the Enochian Aethers.
How's that going for you?
I have done the 30th and the 29th.
Okay.
They were interesting experiences.
Yeah.
And the basic thing that it's telling me is that you need to prepare to cross the abyss.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's not the sort of preparation that I was expecting either for that. What I am personally supposed to be doing right now to prepare to cross the abyss is answer the question, why do you want to? What's the point? What are you going to gain from this? Is there something to gain? Why? What are you looking for?
There feels like a trap in that question.
A little bit. A little bit. Like, you know, if there's enlightenment on the other side of this in some way, why do you want that? What is it you're expecting? What are you hoping for? What are you thinking is going to be different? And I can answer, you know, I expect some different perspective on the universe. I expect some unification with the source as a mental experience that people have described. And like, but so what? What do you gain from that? In what way will your life be different? What's going to change? That's what I'm working to understand myself.
You see,
personally,
it's a good question, even from a practical point of view, because when you think of things like awakening or enlightenment or stuff like that, it doesn't seem to, people who I know who are awakened, or it doesn't seem to have improved their lives in any way. It doesn't seem to have changed them as a person dramatically in any way. Obviously it does a bit, in the same way that, you know, going to Greece for a month on your holidays changes you slightly as a person. You know, everything kind of changes. But what is the point of it? You know, it's one of those questions that it's such a good question. It kind of feels, you know, well, I mean, how do you answer that? You know what I mean?
Like, exactly. Some sort of,
But it's so it'll be interesting when you do finish the journey to try and when we'll come back and tell us what it was and what the answer was.
Because
it feels a bit like, you know, the Monty Python thing where we get to the bridge and you know, this is the question. If you get it wrong, you get flung off into the air.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there is.
I don't know that I'm supposed to have an answer. I think I'm just supposed to
think
about it.
But that might be the answer. Yeah, it's a contemplate. It's like a Zen koan. There's no actual answer to it.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me this. What's then the plans other than this Zen koan of a question that you have to answer? Have you anything that you're working on? Do you want to, you know, get into a new divination system, or have you put all that kind of stuff behind you, or have you any plans? It's hard to make plans in the world at the minute, I suppose.
That's very true. I still grab new magical books and read through them whenever I can. There's some interesting things that I've seen recently that I want to try. Like, a lot of people are talk about, you know, invoke your higher self, invoke your holy guardian angel. Mm. I saw a book recently that says invoke your lower self, as in the animalistic part of you, not your shadow.
Oh, yeah.
But just do it. See what happens. Try
like
it.
Like your base human needs, mm-hmm. instincts, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Right.
Get a better touch with the spiritual part of the physical reality of yourself.
Yeah, because that is one of the things that we tend in kind of spiritual circles, I suppose, whatever the correct word for that is to shun. Or feel, you know, mm-hmm. that it's something that is to be ignored or gotten rid of, I suppose. In the same way, you know, we have that kind of thing about, you know, oh, the world is an illusion, so we don't have to worry about it. It's not real anyway. That we kind of have that same kind of... So that's very interesting. I like that. That's something I'm going to... what is the book, or where did you come across that? Or is it just a thought that came to you?
Yeah, that's in the book Psychic Witch.
Right, okay.
I've seen it.
I don't have it, but I'll look into it. Is it a good book? I don't know.
I enjoyed it, yeah. It's got some interesting thoughts and practices in there, and it's more about your mental processes and stuff than it is about, say, this incantation and money comes to you. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. How are you getting on with the Margia stuff? You still enjoying it?
I am. I've been on and off working my way through it. I stopped for a short time, but I am on I just finished the Beloved Practice. That's the one that I just did. So I'm on whatever's after that.
The reason why I'm asking it is that I think you will find some of the imagery towards the end very interesting in relation to your lucid dream that you talked about earlier on.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, not the Dr. Manhattan bit, but the kind of symbolism of the mountain and particularly the storm and stuff like that. It's, and the fact that you have originally the whole forest. And I'll not give you any spoilers. I'll let it unfold itself in front of you. So, is there anything else you would like to touch upon, or anything you want to talk about? Websites or anything you want to promote, or any kind of projects or anything that you would like to? Don't to thank your mum.
Well, if anyone would like a tarot or rune or om reading, I am on Etsy as Divination by Jason. Very easy to find. Cool. There's a Facebook page, Divination by Jason, as well.
Great stuff. I'll put that out in the show description as well.
Great. Thank you, Tommy.
Well, that was wonderful. And fair dues to you. You've certainly put an awful lot of the work in, more than I would say a lot of people. People tend to do it for a week and then give up, or do it until the going gets tough and then give up. So it's a testament to you, and fair dues to you, and well earned. And I hope that you find the answer, or find that there is no answer to the question you've been posed. Then you meet up with Cronzon is quick and as painless as possible.
Thank you very much, Tommy.
So we'll do it again. We'll talk soon, and be well.
I'd love to.